Purpose isn't reserved for a chosen few. It awakens the moment you decide to answer your own call. This show is about inspiring you and helping you to remember that you also have a purpose.
Today, I'm excited to introduce someone who is doing an incredibly important job in the space of talking about mental health in the workplace. Sharon Fekete is an author, keynote speaker, and business and life who combines decades of business experience with deeply personal journey of healing and transformation. So she's the perfect person to be talking about this. Sharon first shared her story, The Broken Road to Mental Health and Life and Business, which she wrote to honor her 25th sobriety anniversary. Through that work, she began an important conversation about the reality of mental health challenges that so many people experience, but often struggle to talk about. She has continued that conversation with her second book, which I can't wait to talk about, where she expands on the idea that healing, growth, and mental wellness are an ongoing journey. Sharon is also certified in mental health and wellness in the workplace through the University of South Florida, and has spent more than a decade running her consulting company while helping organizations and individuals better understand the importance of mental health. Mm. Her message is simple but powerful. We are all under construction.
Yes, we are.
Hence the crane. And we are willing to talk about, when we are willing to talk about mental health openly, we create healthier people, stronger workplaces, and more compassionate communities. And so you fit right in to what my mission is, which is how are we shaping a new world, mm-hmm. raising consciousness, and all of that starts with the individual. So welcome to the show,
Sharon. Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, me too.
So let's just start with, obviously, your work centers around mental health in both life and business, but will you share some of your personal journey that led you to become such a strong advocate for mental health awareness?
Absolutely. So I am sober 31 years as of today. Not that today is my actual anniversary, but I am sober, healthy, and well for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I had a very troublesome teenage life. I think all the hormones and just being a teenager can be very difficult to all of us, but throw in being a girl. And I struggled with my weight. I struggled with acne as a young adult. I was very athletic, but I did not think that I fit in the physical world. I thought too much of how I appeared, like most young girls do. And then it continues. So I think that it was just very challenging. So what happened? Well, the way for me to feel better was to drink. And then when I drank, I had a false sense of self. So instead of actually feeling how I was feeling, which was sad, out of place, judged, there was some bullying, of course, that went on that led to feeling that way. I went to a private Catholic school growing up. And not that that has anything to do with bullying, but it was a long bus ride in Long Island, New York, 40 yeah. minutes to maybe, you know, not have my face look the way it should have because of my acne. So it was just a tough time, you know, and something so innocent to turn into something so destructive is almost, you know, surreal to even talk about today, 31 years ago, because what that led to was two rehabs, 18 years old, 19 years old, and then blacking out at the age of 19 and ending up in Detroit, Michigan from New York. So that is not funny. And I used to often tell that story, and with my own suppression of trauma, I would make a joke. So everybody else felt comfortable around me that, no, I blacked out and I moved to Detroit, Michigan. Well, I actually didn't move. There was no U-Haul. or plan. So being in a blackout, drinking that much and doing so many drugs to end up in a different state with people I did not know and then be okay with that, there was a lot wrong.
Yeah.
A lot wrong. So depression, you know, snuck in, I think, in my second rehab, because in my second rehab, they had told me that I not only was doing 30 days at this, what I like to call, it was like camp, you know, it was actually fun. But from that 30-day camp, they wanted me to go for 3 months to a halfway house in Poughkeepsie, New York, which, you know, as I mentioned in the book, you know, I used to tell everybody I'm from a residential area, which I don't even know what that means. I wasn't like everybody else. I was comparing myself. I was comparing where I was from to where they were from. And so I was exposed to people that had really gone down a really tough road. And I was the youngest one there. I was only 19. You know, these people were my age now. They were 50s, you know, 60s, and had a rough go of it. So for me to then, you know, feel that depression come on, because what happened to me and what happens to many is you take away the substance, whatever it is, food. Well, yeah, I started with food. Food, social media, sex, gambling, drugs, alcohol. Whatever it is that you're abusing to take away the pain is going to catch up.
Yeah,
it's going to catch up. And it definitely morphed into a depression. So my depression started in that teenage era. And then now, you know, to think back about it, the depression was the real issue. The sadness was the real issue. I think most people almost feel better talking about, which is crazy, actually, that I'm saying this, but they feel better talking about alcoholism and addiction than they do about depression and suicide. So
it's more normalized on some level.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And drinking is certainly normalized. And so are drugs. So I think it's important that I kind of unpeel all of those layers, because the root of my issue was pain. And when you are in pain, you will seek out anything to numb it. And that's what I was doing. So then, you know, after being in Detroit, Michigan, in a very, very rough area, it didn't start out that way. I was in Bloomfield Hills at one point, which is very bougie. But I didn't stay there. and very bad relationships, abusive. I was definitely an abused young lady.
What was that like, Sharon, from a standpoint of like waking up and realizing like all of this has transpired? And what do you think?
When I'm there, what did I think when I came to? Because I wouldn't even say I woke up.
Yeah.
I think I just like, oh, came out of whatever coma I was in from alcohol and drugs. I was really cool with it. And I'll tell you why. Because nobody there knew I had a problem with drugs and alcohol.
Okay.
So I had been in two rehabs. I had been in a halfway house. I had been the problem child in the family. I had been, you know, going to AA meetings at a young age, not wanting to go. So, you know, nobody there knew yet. I mean, I think they found out pretty quickly.
Yes.
But I think I was surrounded. Well, I know I was surrounded by people that were the same.
Right.
You know, my goal, as I talk about in the book, was to, you know, live above the bar.
Right.
It's not a great goal, you know, but I really, that's what I wanted at that age, was like, I'll just stay here and I'll bartend and then I'll end up like the heroin addict Larry and just live above the bar. So that's not a very high bar.
Yeah.
So.
Which was different from the family that you grew up with
in
terms of expectations and.
Yeah.
All of that, which I'm sure on some level played a role.
Well, I grew up in a very, I think everybody from the outside would say, even to this day, is very normal. Whatever anybody wants to call normal. You know, I grew up in Long Island, New York, in a residential area. You know, I went to a private elementary and then private high school. I dabbled in some college. And then when I got sober, I went back to business school. My parents are still married. They've been together since they were teenagers. very big, loving, happy, singing, joyful family, two brothers, one 10 years younger and one 3 years older. So we didn't have abuse or dysfunction.
Right.
I think everybody comes from a piece of dysfunction. And I think my piece, if I could label it today, because I don't really love labels, is just that it was very, you don't talk about it.
Right.
Probably why I'm so big on talking about it today.
Yeah. No, and it's so interesting because I talked with a woman who wrote a book, and what was interesting about what you just said was the idea that there was no trauma, mm-hmm. abuse, or anything in her family, but she ended up being in a situation where she didn't feel like she could talk to her family mm-hmm. because her family presented as, I won't say perfect, but mm-hmm. you didn't talk about anything, yeah. and she didn't want to be that person to sort of shake up mm-hmm. that perfect family.
Yeah.
So I think that what's really important about what you're bringing to the table is this idea that it can be just how we are unable, for whatever reason that is, to manage some of the things that are not normal. Like, it's not normal to be bullied. But the things that we struggle with in terms of body image, you know, as we're becoming teenagers and trying to find our way and our identity, mm-hmm. that in and of itself mm-hmm. can be enough if you don't have the right resources to be able to talk about
yeah.
what you're feeling.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of, I think that families, if I can speak about what I've witnessed people say to me when I get off stage after I'm speaking or I'm coaching somebody, families take a lot of, they want to take responsibility for the addict, the alcoholic, the person who has depression's issues. And it is not to be blamed, you know, it has nothing to do. Mine couldn't have been loved more, actually, like truly, truly loved. But there was a lot of, I think what I love to talk, why I love talking about normalize the conversation surrounding mental health is because there's nothing wrong with having a disagreement.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with having a different opinion. There's nothing wrong with arguing. There's nothing wrong with expressing anger. There's nothing wrong with expressing joy. But if we can't discuss it, so I will tell you why I say this, because when I came home from Detroit, Michigan, my parents are from Dublin, Ireland. Okay. So they, you know, sound very Irish to this day. You know, when I came home, it was, don't talk about it. We're not going to talk about Detroit. It was Detroit, not even Detroit, because we want to just pretend that it didn't happen. Now that was out of love. 100%. I know this for sure. And so as you can imagine,
yeah, protection.
We just wanted to, you know, we didn't want you to feel bad, but it is the same thing when we don't talk about suicide,
right.
When we just don't name depression, whatever it is that is ailing somebody, it actually lessens the power that it has over people versus what people think, and that it intensifies. If you can think about, you know, how people talk about cancer, like we want to prevent cancer, you know, well, we want to prevent suicide too.
Yeah.
We want to prevent addiction. We want to prevent alcoholism. We want to prevent all of these things. So they can't actually be suppressed. We have to bring them to the light.
And on an individual level, I mean, what you're speaking to is the importance of acknowledging what is happening inside of you.
Yeah.
And being okay with it, being curious about it,
mm-hmm.
And having that conversation with the people that you know are going to be able to support you in that conversation.
Yeah.
Because that can be incredibly important to have that system around you.
But it's also incredibly important that the entire family gets help by today. I think what goes wrong, is that the person is this being the person. Is she's the alcoholic, she's the drug addict, she needs to go get help. We got help while she was struggling. And then, okay, well, she's good. She's gotten sober, she's gotten her life together, and but there's no understanding about what happened to this said person. And nobody else thinks that they need help,
yeah,
which can be very isolating. It can be a very lonely thing. It's so much easier for people to go, well, and believe you me, I've heard it. Well, I'm not the one with the problem.
But what's so, and you'll appreciate this, but when we look at, you know, you being the creator of your reality, which, mm-hmm. you know, is my thing, everybody who comes in to your reality, everybody who's a part of your reality plays a part.
Yeah.
You play a part in theirs as well as they play a part in yours.
Yeah, so absolutely.
To your point, being able to understand those. But I think also to your point, people are hesitant to do that because they don't want to look at their own stuff, what could be triggered as a result of that, or feel like they're somehow responsible. Like it's so much easier if it is your problem and I don't have to look at anything that might have contributed. Do you think that that has to do with this idea of the perception of what that means? Like, if I contributed, then that makes me a bad person. Like, there's something wrong with me. And I think that people have a hard time. I loved how you said it's okay to experience all of it. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to have a judgment about something.
Mm-hmm. Depending on how you express that and what you mean by that,
obviously. But being able to just, like, I love the word normalize it. Like, it's okay to take a look at that. I remember when I had to have a conversation with my mom when I was doing my work, mm-hmm. and having to feel like I needed to have a conversation for her to understand mm-hmm. her choices and how it had made me, mm-hmm. how it had contributed. And there was a lot. I remember having to really explain to her, Mom, it's okay. Like, you did the best job you knew how. Like, it's not blaming you.
I'm just
wanting to have a conversation about how this happened.
Yeah.
And what was my perception of it and how I interpreted it and what the result was in my life as a result of it. Yeah. But those are hard conversations to have.
Yeah, hence why, you know, family therapy is probably best suited for those, probably to have a mediator of some sort. It can be very challenging because I do think it's taken very personally. Mm-hmm. But I will also say that generational trauma is real.
Yes.
And it gets passed down. And I think, I know, like to say I think, but I really do know that the generations before us absolutely, we're not having this conversation.
No,
especially with a camera. And then now our generation hopefully is passing down the message versus the mess.
Right.
And there is this real, what you said, you know, every time I think of how somebody reacts to something difficult, there has to be a pause. Mm-hmm. There has to be this opportunity to hear somebody and then to reflect. So if I, you know, I always say the same things because I'm always hoping that they will resonate. You know, listening is not waiting for our opportunity to talk. It's so big because if you cut me off or you get defensive, I'm going to shut down. I'm going to, in my brain, process that as it's not safe to share this with you because you can't actually hear me because you're making it about you or you're not being curious about what I'm saying. You're just taking it as blame or I feel like I have to be defensive now. And I think that's why, you know, which maybe we'll get to, you know, the practice of pausing and meditating and actually really learning how to listen better, because listening is a true, true skill.
Yes. Yeah. So important. And really that part of trying to put yourself in somebody else's shoes to really mm-hmm. understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like you said, it's not a skill that lots of people have. And
no,
it takes work to really be able to hear that way, listen that way. What were some of the major stepping stones or defining moments that helped shape the work that you're doing today? I mean, you feel like we've already addressed that, but is there something else you would add?
Yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I felt really great. I was interviewed on national television not too long ago, and they asked that question, like, what really shaped your leadership? And my leadership was absolutely shaped in those rooms because I was able to learn how to communicate. I was able to learn how to listen to people that are struggling and to not give them feedback. They call it cross-talking.
Right.
So to be able to listen to somebody and then not go, you know, it's kind of like if I was to share, this is a real thing that's happening. My dad has dementia and he's in a memory care. And somebody says, you know, so how do you feel about that? Oh my God, you know, it's been really, really tough. It's really been a struggle. And then they start telling me about their aunt in Ohio that has it. It is a nanosecond. I always say this term, nanosecond, before the focus has been now taken off of me and my opportunity to share with you, and it has been twisted and made about you. And that never feels good. So I leave rooms when that happens, because it happens all the time. You know, somebody will say, Maite, how are you today? And you go, you know what? Today's been really tough. You think that's bad. You should hear. And then it's so, or, you know, I like to call it trauma Olympics, you know,
that's the biggest trauma.
And it's really, and so when I am asked that today, because of course I used to say many other things.
Sure.
Because a lot of people, even in a 12-step recovery, have said things like, you can't talk about it. I can talk about me being sober. I can talk about my program anytime I want to. I'm not talking about anybody there. There's a big difference when it comes to anonymity. I'm not going to tell you who I see.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, but it is very important to understand that here is something that's free that has been around for over 80 years that is a design for living that has been, you know, laced with the teachings of Dr. Carl Jung, and people don't even realize how he is laced in that program. That's why I love to be able to talk about these things, because this has been so much longer than me sitting here having a conversation with you, that this free space has worked. And nothing is perfect. You know why? It's run by the humans. So when AI comes along and starts running it, maybe it'll be even better. But really, it's that's what has shaped it. It has totally shaped it, because it's given me all of the tools of how to listen to all of my employees when I was running medical practices, how to be empathetic to what they might be going through, that when I saw the doctor screaming at the nurse in the hallway, that I knew immediately it wasn't about what was happening now, but there's probably something going on in that physician's life.
Yeah.
That I'm going to need to talk to him at a different time, not when it's heated. All of that I learned through this beautiful design for living.
And it also, I think, as an aside, it kind of feels like, it almost feels like the other piece that you learn is, like, I want to say stay in your lane from the standpoint of your recovery and your focus, that you can hear and obviously appreciate and understand and give empathy, but you don't take it on. Like, this is your work, and that's why you're here.
And as you mentioned, I didn't write my first book until I was 25 years sober.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say a word until I had worked out a lot of the kinks. And then the kinks that I didn't even know I had started to be worked on after I released my first book.
Yes.
When I say that this is a journey, and what is so alarming and can be very, very scary for me to witness is people just going on a healing journey and then wanting to help everybody. I understand why people want to do that, but I'm also very curious as to why that happens, you know? Because I do think that if we are not really working on our own foundation and our own trauma and our own healing, I mean, I am not an active participant in my illness today.
Right.
I am well. I am happy. I don't even, I don't even like to, I don't say anymore that I'm an alcoholic. I just say, I'm Sharon. This is who I am. And I'm happy to talk about what I've been through and where I've been, but I didn't give that any power.
Yeah. In terms of that being a label that you.
Yeah. I don't have any labels on me. None. I listen to people label it up on the daily. And that's okay, because I think that it serves a purpose in their life at that moment.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I am empathetic to what people go through as well and have no judgment about anybody and how long it takes.
Yeah, because it is. We're all on a journey.
Every day.
Right?
Every damn day.
We learn so sure. All right. So long-term sobriety and mental wellness requires ongoing commitment. So what are some of the practices and habits that have helped you stay grounded and continue to support you on your journey?
Well, how long do you have? Okay. So this is absolutely my favorite thing. And I almost feel like I say it so much, but maybe I don't say it enough. It's been 31 years. And so for 31 years that I have been free from wanting to leave this earth, it is a very serious practice that I have. So I get up at 5:30 every morning, Monday through Friday, and I exercise first. This morning it was strength training. And then I go into my meditation corner and I meditate. I light a candle. It's very intentional. And when I'm done meditating, depending on if the husband has gotten up or if I have more time, we will have coffee. We will go outside and we will walk the neighborhood. My dog just passed in November, but we're the dogless wonders that walk the neighborhood still until we get a new one. And yeah, and then after that, I write in a very specific work every day about my own power and my own manifestations and my own what I want to achieve on the daily that has already happened many, many times. So, and I pray, and then I look at my phone.
Yeah.
So I hope that wasn't missed, because I do not wake up with technology.
Yeah.
I wake up thanking God that I'm here. And it's very intentional, the words that I speak. And recently I've been doing a little dancing in my, while I'm getting the coffee ready for Rob. And sometimes he comes out and I'm dancing and then he'll just go, here she goes. You know, but, yeah. And so that's every single day.
Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday is always a little different, because I get to go to Om meditation.
Sure.
Go into silk aerial cocoon. But it, I don't leave my house without meditating. That's my, like, if I have happened to have woken up late, I'm not doing exercise maybe, but always, I'm always out in nature. I'm always walking. Yesterday, I
biking
13 miles. It's my everything, because I don't take any drugs, and I haven't since I was 21. I'm 53. So that is my medication. I have a prescription for wellness. Yeah. So I don't, and I have honest conversations, and I have a lot of community.
Yeah.
I have a lot of community. I practice opposite action. I mean, this is a long answer.
Yes.
I know, but it is true.
But it's important.
It is important, because this is how much work it takes to feel good and to feel joyful.
Yes.
So I'm not one of those, like, if you said, how are you today? I'm not going to go, I'm so tired. Like, I don't bring any of that energy, because it's so boring. Mm-hmm. So,
and you're speaking it into existence.
How would I lay?
I mean, I'm
happy.
Yes. I have a girlfriend that every time she tells me she's exhausted, I go, oh,
I know.
Okay. That is why you're exhausted.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
I hear that from you a lot.
Yeah. I'm winning. I'm successful. Yes. I'm all the things. And again, like, you know, I went to watch A Course in Miracles when I lived in New York 25 years ago. This has been in my world for so long. Yes. But I think when even me writing these books and talking about mental health, I think what people on the outside think is going to be like dreary and legit. When I get off stage, people are like, you should be a comedian. No, I shouldn't. No, I can't, because that is very difficult and an art in and of itself.
Yeah.
I might say some funny things, but it is very light to talk about the things that kept me in the dark.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing light to it. And I make sure that I do practice opposite action. I think isolation, checking out into television, I don't turn the television is a big thing for me. So I don't get to articulate this much. So thank you for asking me this very long-winded answer.
It's okay because it's so important.
It is.
Like, so this is the key.
Yes. My depression equates to television. So I watched endless hours of television and I have no recollection of what I watched. Mm-hmm. I just needed some kind of distraction from ending my life. And I don't think I say that enough, that anything I'm doing, whether that, and I don't doom scroll. So when people say doom scroll, like my feed is like butterflies and dogs and manifestations, you know, I don't have negativity. I don't watch the news. I don't watch, I know what's going on in the world. You can't go anywhere without hearing about it, but I also don't give it any energy.
Yeah.
Because I'm only in control of me.
And what it sounds like is just extreme intention around you creating the life that you want to be living.
Yes.
In every moment.
Like so the moment has to be open. The first thing I do in the morning is I have to open the blinds because I kept the blinds closed when I was in a depression. So I can't be in dark.
I mean,
my workplace is a wellness space because it is bright and it has natural energy in the space. It's very, very intentional, everything I do, because I tried to kill myself.
Yeah.
So if people don't respect that in me, I have to remove myself.
Right.
Like, I will just leave. I mean, you were witness to me leaving yesterday. And not just because if an event is even too overwhelming, I have to go. I have to get on my bike because it's going to be too much. And I know that I have a lot of work to do and I do these things for a living. I have these conversations every day. I'm coaching people. So I have to be well. That is my priority.
Well, and there's just so much about that I love, Sharon, because again, you're creating your reality. You've made a decision through these life circumstances that, you know me, like you, I don't know how you think about this, but do you entertain the idea that you chose to come and experience all this as a part of your soul's evolution?
I absolutely know that I had a soul contract and that I absolutely have to do what I'm doing today in order to help others. My life's work is service that I get paid a lot of money to do, and I'm willing to accept that money.
Yep.
And I welcome it in. And very, very serious about that. Yes, I know. Listen, imagine how silly it would be if source energy, whatever you want to call it, to make yourself feel comfortable. I have no problems with any of it, but I do respect that people have religious trauma.
Yes.
So I have, as a speaker, I'm very aware of all of this. So I know that I was saved. So how selfish of me to not give back what was so freely given to me. On a level that is uncomfortable for people in my own family or my own life, but that doesn't matter because I have a higher purpose and I know what it is.
Well, and you're true to yourself.
Yes.
And again, what I love about it is that you're a really amazing example of what it means to take responsibility, like 100% full responsibility for your life, for the choices you've made, and for what you choose in this moment to continue to be about for yourself. Yourself first in order to be able to serve others.
Yeah, and I have made many mistakes. And that's why I say when it comes to knowing that Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps of recovery has shaped my leadership, if I've done something wrong, I'm going to make amends about it.
Right.
I'm going to say, ooh, you know what? I apologize for that. I regret what I said and I regret what I did. So what can I do to make that up to you? Not, I'm so sorry. and then just keep going, or I am not going to avoid it. I am going to. And, you know, sometimes, because I've heard this, you know, from people in my life, you always have, why do you always sound like such a therapist or such a counselor? Why do you always talk like this? And I take that as a very high compliment. I have done so much work on myself to be able to take responsibility when I've made a mistake and change and go, you know what? I feel bad about this. Let me fix it. And let me not talk negatively about people. And let me not feed into gossip about people. Let me not do those things because, you know, those are not of a higher.
Right. It's not good energy.
It's not good at all. And I also am totally tired of people talking about our energy at the same time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, all the time I hear, this person, Sharon, you have such good energy. I'm like, can we curse on this?
Okay. Yes.
But like,
keeping it real.
I mean, it's very nice to hear all the time, but not everything has to be this altruistic. You know, it's just like, let's just be. Because even in recovery, you can imagine people would slogan fest. Jesus. Slogan fest in recovery, slogan fest in corporate. Let's table this. Let's circle back. You know what I mean? Let's also keep coming back. It works if you work it. Just be yourself. Like, just speak. Like, because if we are continuously, like, talking in slogans, it's not real.
It's not real. No,
it's not a real
authentic conversation.
Yeah, it's really not. I agree. So I'm just grateful that I got to explain all of that. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And I said action is very important to me because I always think I don't want to. My type, do you want to do this interview? My head? No, not because I don't want to do this. That's how I'm programmed. That's how depression works in my life. Right. No, stay home. Don't go on camera. Don't talk about this. And then I go, yes. I go, yes, I will. Because everything to me is that. No, I don't want to go to this event. No, I don't want to go here. No, I don't want to go here. Okay, I should go. I get it. I hear you.
So it's an internal practice that you do on a regular basis. So
I wish it wasn't, you know, this.
Yeah.
For some, it looks like they just float out of bed.
Does it feel easier though, Sharon?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, I wake up happy, joyous, and free. I'm annoyingly happy. I sing a lot. You know, you saw me dancing yesterday at an event. Yeah. I am very positive and happy. Yes, but it's because of all the work before you see me.
Yeah. But it also accumulates because I also feel that way, that the more work that I've done, the... Like, it changes the circles that you're in, the energy that you attract. Like, you don't have very much negativity in my life. Like, they're just, and when it pops up, it's tricky because it's so, like, not the norm.
Yeah. I don't want to catch it.
Yeah. I agree. Let's keep it where it needs to be.
I have a force field around me. Nobody can see.
I agree. Yeah. For sure. All that bad energy. Doesn't come.
Maite, let's get everybody to stop telling everybody they're tired. Or better, I'm busy. How about I'm productive?
Yes.
With a smile, you know?
Yeah.
It's challenging.
My priorities are different right now.
Yes. We don't have to, if one more person tells me they're busy, the only reason I don't tell people I'm busy is because I actually am.
There you go.
So we don't need to put that out there.
So, I have a question for you.
Yes.
When you wrote The Broken Road to Mental Health.
Which what?
The first one.
Okay.
Because the second one is The Broken
Open Road.
Yes. What message did you want readers, especially business leaders, to take away from your story in that first book?
I know I said it in the first pages, is that I wanted to release people from whatever it was that they thought an alcoholic, a drug addict, or somebody that had depression looked, sounded like, or where they came from, because that person is me. So, you know, there is an intentional reason too why I will show up with a dress, with makeup, with because whatever you think of that person, because if I go outside this door today and I see a homeless person, that is me,
right?
Because I was that. I was homeless.
So interesting, because when you just said that, you know, I had this knowing or this flashback to this idea that in all the lives that we have had, we've been it all.
Yeah.
And so you've gotten to experience it very drastically in this life. But your message is one of acceptance, not judgment, an awareness that people are people. And everybody, like, you know, the reality is that in an instant, your life can change in a way that you don't expect, don't know. And now you're in a situation that's totally foreign to you. So the ability to speak of it and be the example of it is really powerful.
Thank you.
Really, really powerful. Which brings me to the next question, which is then in the broken open road, and I've heard you say this, but I think that for our audience, it just would be great. What was the driving force behind writing the second book? Because I feel like when you wrote your first one, like it was like, not an ending per se, but this acknowledgement of all of this time, your sobriety, where you were at that point.
Yeah.
But then 5 years or 6 years later, there was something happened.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what that was like for you in terms of your second book.
Yeah. So in the first book, at the end of every chapter, I put a business life parallel and a business tip, because it wouldn't be me if I didn't, because I've been running businesses for a long time and my own for the last 11 years. And there's a lot of staying power to that. There's a lot of consistency to that. And what I wanted everybody to see in the first book was that your life will parallel. There, you know, my tagline now is how you do life is how you do business. Because if you do not adjust, instead of saying fix, what has happened in your life, it will funnel through that business of yours. So, I mean, nothing exposes trauma like opening a business. And what I witnessed too was that in my first few years of opening my business, I really felt like an imposter, and I felt like I had to do so much more, and I had to look a certain way, and I had to sound a certain way. And I just exhausted myself, you know? And then when I released the first book, I did not think that this was going to be what I did for a living, because you don't know. You just follow.
You shine. You keep showing up.
Yeah. And so what I know for sure now is that when I wrote that first book, I had all of this suppressed trauma that I never dealt with. Because there is one thing about being a woman in sobriety is that I focused only on the solution. So,
meaning the solution being AA and becoming sober.
And also the solution of your life, not ever looking at the problem, okay. Not ever going back to what might have caused it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I understand.
So, and I love a solution. And in the beginning of my business career, on my card, it said solution strategist, because I'd much prefer to look at the solution than the problem. Where today, because I was able to, I mean, I was writing and reliving this trauma that I had just, when I speak, I always push it down and go, I just pushed it down because watch this, you know, now I'm going to be director of operations for New York Medical, and then I'm going to be, you know, the administrator for a pediatric practice, and then I'm going to open a business, and, you know, don't tell anybody what you've been through. And then I wrote it all down, and I'm like, well, girl, you sure have been through a lot. You know, maybe some of that stuff will lead you to why you were actually depressed. So all of that happened. So, and if it wasn't for the wonderful books that you have in your bookstore, I would have never been led back to who I am. And that is actually what happened. So I started going to therapy, very serious about my therapy. I had a whole transformation in those few years where I dealt with that. Then I started somatic therapy, which I'm still in. I started being very serious about my meditation practice because I missed a lot. You know, it says, and I talk about this in my second book, there's a step in Alcoholics Anonymous where it says, sought through prayer and meditation. And I always saw prayer because, you know, I never had a problem with prayer. And I just never shut the hell up to listen, you know? So I was no problem, like, throwing stuff in the prayer box. And that was a nod to my friend, John Murray, who used to always do that. And he's no longer with us today, you know, because I do think that there is much to be said about not staying in your trauma, but facing it with the right person, because there are very great healers and there are very poor healers. And I happen to have a lot of access to the right ones. And I really started the journey. And then there was no way I was going to let people think that that was the end.
Right.
And now I can't wait until I release my next book this year, because it's a total different one from 2024 too. Because there are so many things when you ask me about, you know, do you believe that this is a contract? And yes, of course I do. I've known this since I was saved. I mean, I saw St. Bernadette, for God's sakes, in a grotto. So there's so many things that have happened to me that are metaphysical that I did not put in those books, because I know for sure that you cannot get to the enlightened until you have gone through it and been willing to face it. So I was very willing to face it. It was very hard. It was very scary. And now today I feel like my nervous system is on point and I'm very calm.
And thank you for bringing that up, because that I feel like there's two parts to it for me right now. One is that I don't think it has gotten enough exposure, credit, whatever, the fact that your nervous system really takes a toll when we go through life and without that focus on it. Because I know for me and the work that I've done, I've only just started with that piece of it, you know, making sure that your body is feeling safe and grounded. And I don't think enough people, I think it's starting. I guess that's the second piece. I feel like I'm getting more information and people are talking about it a lot more than that used to be.
Yeah.
So it's almost been like stepping stones. So the sobriety and then the healing of trauma, and now the peace that lives within our body that is feeling really good.
I also feel like it's, I feel like it's ridiculous that people don't think that they need to talk to somebody.
Well,
I know what happens, and it's intentional. Like, all of this is intentional, which I'm so glad that you're talking about the work of being intentional. I would never be in business without a coach. I think it's insulting to me that people just open businesses and they don't have coaches, or they don't stay with coaches. My first business coach was 11 years ago. And then I hired another coach. And I belong to a group where I meet every week. And a lot of my clients don't come, but I go because I never want to think that I'm the smartest one. And then also in therapy. So a lot of my clients, whether if they come to me for business, they're going to come to me for life, because I'm a business life coach. I'm going to talk about life coaching, but then I'm going to gently send you to a therapist, and not just any therapist. You know, I'm going to think about what type of therapist would be good for you. Is it a trauma therapist? Is it, you know, a somatic therapist? Is it a family therapist? Is it a sex therapist? There are so many different, and I don't think enough people know how many different modalities there are. We cannot go from trauma to manifestation, people. We just can't. So because you don't believe it, if you are saying these things, but you have not done that internal work, and it is a lot of work. It's not like I'm just, you know how many people tell me, oh, I've been to therapy. And I'm like, well, bitch, I'm still in it. I don't know. What does that mean? I've been there. Like, are you good now? Are we good? No, like I'm forever learning about myself. It's not even about anything else. I'm just not so excited. Every time I get to see my therapist, I'm like, yeah. I'm always like, yay. It's such a different feeling, well, I think, that what people view it as from the outside.
Well, but it also, it's stages. And you're at a stage where what you're dealing with or addressing is on a different level than when you're, it's all part of the healing and the continuation of what I look at as like self-actualization, like the real knowing of who you are so that you're showing up as you've remembered who you always were.
Yeah.
Like being able to peel away those layers. But like you said earlier, like it's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. When you go to family therapy and you know, everybody's there and you all have to own your parts.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of courage and bravery, I think, to be in that process. So for everybody out there who goes to therapy, has
get some damn help.
Yes. Go get help. And that's what I was going to say is having a coach with you, I know that that's something that's extremely important to you, that you will not coach somebody who doesn't have a coach or a therapist.
And well, they won't even be attracted to me. They won't select me.
Right.
And they definitely won't stay with me. Because I see you. I see you. Because I am you and you are me.
Yes.
The beautiful piece about being in long-term recovery and having to done so much work is that I have been in every stage of, I feel like, everybody in life and in business. But my ego was really running the show, you know?
And now you have a real good understanding of that.
Yeah. You know, I've had it for a very long time. I'm just talking about it more.
I got you. Okay.
And I have it more. I guess is what I want to clarify.
Yeah. Tell me more about that.
I have, well, meditation has been an unlock that I, you know, if you think about the most successful people in the world, they all talk about meditation and they all talk about mindset and they all talk about the work that they've done. And they basically all have a therapist and they're constantly learning, you know? So I can even, from my bookshelf, I could tell you about where my healing journey has been. Because I did go through a phase where I had to learn everything I needed to know about trauma. I had to read Lost Connections. I had to read Dr. Gabor Mate. You know, I had a Jen Sincero. I had to learn all about that. I had to learn about, you know, all of the myths and the limitations that I had about money and what I manifest. So all of it has, how could I get to that stage if I wasn't willing to do that really hard stuff? Because it is so much easier to go from, you know, well, I've done work to being in the work always, you know?
Well, like we're constantly growing and expanding. I mean, that's just how we are. So the support that we provide in doing that is critical.
It's so good.
It is good.
It's so good.
It is good. I mean, it just makes life so much easier.
Oh my God. I love nothing more than not knowing all the answers. I really do. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so grateful that somebody's smarter than me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and that there's always something that we're reaching for. And it's one of the things about Abraham Hicks that I love is the fact that like you just never get it done.
Yeah.
Because there's always something more. Like you can have the most incredible desires and at some point you'll reach them and then there'll be more.
Yeah.
There's always more. So let's talk a little bit about mental health in the workplace. So there are many business owners who are beginning to understand the importance of that.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you believe in today's world, in this moment in time, why it's even more critical? Because I think it's even more critical now than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree? What's your thought?
Yeah, absolutely. But I have been thinking it for so long. That when I hear somebody go, especially now, and that is so, especially now, since 2019, since I released my book, is really the term that so many say to me. So every year I've been able to witness people say, especially now during the pandemic, especially now during the hurricanes, especially now with the president, especially now. So especially now, since 31 years ago when I got sober, it was especially important then too.
Yeah.
It's always been important. It's just, we now have social media.
Yeah.
You know, which is a great thing if we're using it responsibly and we're being an example of how we should use it to others. But I definitely think that in the workplace, it's easy, in my opinion, to help people, because kind of like what I've decided to do to be a speaker is that I've always wanted to help the masses versus just helping somebody one-on-one. I love helping one-on-one, but I really want to reach a bigger audience, because if this message gets out there, then just more people are helped, sure. Right? Sure. So there's also very practical ways. So I want to give you an example. You know, if somebody called me today and they want, just like, I want to kill myself, I would not say hang up and dial 988. Or I would not get a therapist for that. I would tell them to go take a walk. I would say, I want you to take a breath with me, you know, on the phone. And I want you to just go outside and take a walk around the block and then call me when you come back. Because in the moment, when you have been somebody that has wanted to leave this earth, somebody actually telling you to call somebody else is not great. And when the EAP saved my life, and this is why it is so important to me, and an EAP is an employee assistance program, and not all businesses can afford to have an EAP, but it should be their priority. So my dad at New York Hospital had an EAP, and while I was in that blackout in Detroit, Michigan, how was my dad as the boss going to function every day? Thank goodness he had Ben. So Ben was then able to help him. And that was over 30 years ago. So again, especially now when his daughter was in a blackout in another state, right? So thank goodness. And then Ben helped me because my dad knew me and he knew that I was not somebody who liked somebody to give me bullshit. And Ben was very practical. And I think that the practical element is removed. I have not spoken publicly a lot about how insulting it is to think that it's going to be a psychologist, a therapist, a doctor that is going to be the person that helps shift somebody's mind. It's actually me or somebody like me.
Right.
It's actually somebody that has been through it, because we're going to tell you what to do. Practically, I think they should sit alongside of us. I think they should walk the journey with us. But I think that the people that have the lived experience can help the most people. And I've felt that way for many, many years. So because my nervous system is regulated, I don't get upset about it anymore. But you should have seen me in 2019. God, you still piss me off. But I really do think that there is so much opportunity to give people practical resources. It is really about just asking questions, little questions. And in the workplace, we make that difference by the people that are the managers, the leaders, the executives, the CEOs. How are you?
I'm just going to ask you, what does that look like?
So this is what it looks like in real time. We'll play it out for the audience.
Okay.
Maite, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good today, Sharon.
Yeah? Tell me.
Yeah.
You know, why are you feeling so good? And are you feeling so good?
I am. Today, I got to work out early this morning and work out hard, and that always makes me feel good. I was getting ready for my day and felt pretty prepared. Just kind of focusing on what can I do today to make today go the best.
I love that. So you got to start your day with exercise. You feel good. So you are good right now. Do you feel like you were seen and heard by me?
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. Now let's show everybody what really happens. Play the role, Maite. Hey, Maite, how you doing?
I'm fine, Sharon.
You're fine, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, I had the best weekend. It was so good. And I really loved everything about my husband. And he like made this great barbecue last night and cheeseburgers with no bun because, you know, watching my carbs. And it's, then I watched the show. It was really, really great. And So, all right. Well, like, enjoy your day. Do you feel like in that moment that I cared about you at all?
Oh, no.
And I gave you the fine.
Yes.
The trigger word for
yes.
It's not really fine.
Yeah. So in many worlds, fine is, you know, fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. And most people will say fine because it's easier, because I know that you're not going to hear me, and you're especially not going to hear me in the workplace. But if any leader was just trained on the practical ways to engage with employees, because HR does not mean therapy.
Right.
It's human resources, but human resources can do a heck of a lot better than just, you know, checking the box. So real time.
So asking questions, and as you talked earlier, really listening to what the answer is.
Yeah.
Present.
Yeah.
Good eye contact. Yeah. All of those kinds of things. Because the end result is the other person feeling.
So if you told me I'm not really doing good, say I'm not really doing good. I'm just trying to do this.
I'm not really doing good today.
Well, you know, we have a busy day. So like, what are we going to do to get you feeling good? How does that feel?
That feels dismissive.
Okay.
As well.
Perfect. Okay. So what it can be is you telling me you're not doing good.
I'm not sure.
Okay. I hear you. I want you to come in my office. I want to sit down and talk to you for a minute.
Okay.
Come with me. And then I sit down with my Tay and I make it all about her in the slowest, with no feedback. And then when you're done sharing, I would say one of two things. My favorite is to say, how can I support you?
Mm-hmm.
And my second favorite is to say, do you want feedback or do you want me to just listen? And this way it becomes their choice.
Yeah.
This isn't like, I got to get you, let's look at your insurance, let's get you into an appointment. This is real regulated nervous systems having conversations with regulated nervous systems. And this is free and can be taught.
And I think the important part of that is that it speaks to everyone's need to be seen. Because we live in a world where, like we were talking earlier, like we're just kind of going through the motions and not really being intentional in how we connect with people. And so that little bit of just having that conversation and really acknowledging by hearing, listening, can make a huge difference.
Oh, my God. It saves lives.
Yeah.
It literally saves lives. You know, when there's not a lot of people that I can do this with in my own real life, because people look to me as somebody that is good and strong and funny and happy and healthy. So when I'm having those moments, I have to be intentional on how I'm going to reach out to somebody. Mm-hmm. And most of the people in my life are strong, executive type business owner women and men. So I will, in a text, say, can I have 7 minutes of your time?
Where have I heard that?
Simon.
Okay.
And when I heard Simon, who I can't think of his last name.
Sinek.
On some podcast say, that is so brilliant, because I have to warn somebody that I'm going to need you to hear me and that you're ready to receive me. It's a shame that it has to be like that, though, by the way. But we have techniques of how we can get somebody to listen to us, or like, hey, I really know I'm going through something right now. I don't have time to talk to you about this right now, but can we put something on the calendar? And then when we have it on the calendar and I pretend that I'm good now, that you. So I'm very like, I tell people to reach out to me on Tuesdays because I go see my dad on Tuesdays. I'm very intentional because I know that one day my father's not going to be here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to need people in my life to know how to treat me. So if we don't do that, we're not going to get what we want and what we need.
Right.
So I just tell people.
Yeah. Well, again, being the example of what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And through your example, definitely within your circle and in the conversations that you're having, helping to understand, like, it is unique, but there are some things that are just universal.
Totally.
You know, in terms of how people want to be treated, how they want to be seen.
Yeah.
The ability to share your story, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that is in the moment when it's causing something that, yeah. you know, you have feelings about.
And I want to be sure to say we should not be trauma dumping on people. It is really.
So explain that a little bit.
Okay, so I will say to somebody, hey, are you getting help for that really traumatizing thing you just told me in passing at the coffee shop? What do you mean? And the defensive will start. What do you mean? No, I'm good. I have a ton of friends I tell my stuff to. No. I mean, you seem really friendly and really open to these things. I mean, God, Sharon, you wrote 2 books about it. And I'm like, no, I really mean like, when you're going to get your hair done, you should not be telling your hairdresser everything that is dysfunctional in your life because they're a hairdresser. So there are professionals that can handle what you are telling them and are trained to then leave said person that has trauma and work on their own nervous system. So it is very unfair that people say the things that many, many, many have said to me. Hey, how are you today? Oh my God, you're not going to believe what happened. I mean, I got hit by a car and then my dog died and then my mom died and my dad died and my aunt died. And no, you can't do that to me. Right. And I have to be able to say, okay, it sounds like you're going through a lot right now and pause them slowly. We have to learn how to do this in the real world. Because people coming into your space when you especially feel great and start telling you, you can't imagine all the things that people say to my husband, the UPS man. He's just trying to drop off a package. Let the man drop the package off.
Yeah, because you know? At the end of the day, like you have to be in a really, really incredible space to not have it affect you. And yeah. Some people, but you don't know who that person is. And yeah. So you're right. Like you're yeah.
Yeah. And when you go to your friends that are also dysregulated, that's not helpful either. So of course you're going to go tell your friend the negative side so they can then tell you about how negative it was for them to experience something absolutely not similar because they're going to compare it to their aunt, Oregon. I don't know where I come up with Oregon, but I've never even been there. I like to use Oregon a lot.
Well, I think that at some point you should go.
Maybe
I've heard that it's absolutely beautiful.
Okay.
So for someone who's watching this, who may be struggling in this moment with their mental health, what is one step that you would encourage them to do today?
I would like for you to go outside and take a walk. And I would like you to take as many intentional breaths as you can and hold the breath and then release it. And I would like for you to not bring your AirPods. And I would like for you to not be distracted, to be curious about why you feel this way. And if you can think about not dying today, if you can think about putting it off until tomorrow, because if you still feel that way tomorrow, then we can have another conversation. But for today, in this moment, I just want you to stay. I want you to stay. I think there are many, many resources that most people would tell you, like to dial 988, go to a therapist, talk to somebody who you feel safe with. But most people are not in the examples that we gave. So I would encourage you to go outside first and look up, you know, and then ask some higher source to come in and to help you to stay. And I would ask you not to tell those people that you don't feel safe with. And I would absolutely encourage you to speak it, because as soon as you speak it, you will feel better. And then, of course, I want you to like have a therapist and, you know, do
yeah,
all
somebody that can ongoingly support whatever is happening with you.
Yeah. And I also think even before the viewing of this episode today, people should be encouraged if they are sensitive or suicidal or going through something traumatic right now to watch this with caution.
Yeah.
because we don't want anybody to feel surprised when we're going to have real conversations about things like I've mentioned, which is suicide, mental health, alcoholism, and addiction. These are all very serious topics. You might just think, because my tea is going to help you manifest something, but maybe not right now, talking to Sharon, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's important that we do find people that we feel safe with, but we have to be willing to say the things. Yeah. We have to be willing to be uncomfortable and to be vulnerable. It's a practice.
It is a practice. And it goes through waves because, as you said, and we talked about, there are some parts that are scary and are really hard and
yeah,
and take a lot of support and a lot of commitment to yeah, get through it. But to your point, as you do that, it loses its power. It becomes something that does get transmuted or alchemized mm-hmm, into strength and perseverance and resilience mm-hmm, and service.
Yeah. And I also think when you have come out the other side of it, you have a responsibility to tell other people how amazing you are.
Yes.
And how great you are and how much you have achieved, and be the example for somebody else to show them you could go through really, really hard things and come out not just on top, but like broken through that ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and the things that you described in terms of how you live your life, like mm-hmm, happy and joyous and excited mm-hmm, about like what's next.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what Source has in store for me.
Yeah.
It's been a grand old surprise since 2019.
I bet.
Thanks. Yeah.
So is the third book more about your metaphysical?
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's always been the thing I just want to talk about all the time. But I am, everything that I say, I am in practice of. And I don't want anybody to think that they can get to that space of speaking anything into existence if you haven't done the work. It's a lot of work to feel great.
Yes, it is. And to your manifestation point, like one of the things that has just been really eye-opening on my own law of attraction and manifestation journey is really and truly the knowing at this point that the only way that you manifest anything is by who you're being.
Yeah. And believing.
And believing and knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's so interesting because it's so present moment. Like, how are you showing up in this mm-hmm, present moment? And is that present moment matching whatever it is that you're wanting to achieve?
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, how you collapse.
Yeah. God told me not too long ago, how many things do I have to show you in order for you to believe? And I believe. I do, but I hear that voice all the time and have from, and it has been shown to me. Charlie Brown in a tree stump, St. Bernadette in a grotto, so many that I'll be listing in the next book. And I've never been afraid of talking about it. I just want people to know that because I have been willing to visit the dark night of the soul more than once, that I am never going to disgrace that source by giving me this opportunity to speak about, you know, how beautiful and abundant life really is, you know, and how beautiful everything is. I mean, this is why we live in Florida. I mean, I moved here for the sun. I moved here because I wanted to be out of even the dark that I see in the clouds in New York.
Yeah.
Like everything is so intentional. I have to see water. I have to see flowers. I have to
agree.
You know, so, and for people like myself that have struggled at some point in their life, I would hope that you would do everything that you can.
Right.
Because I'm the only one that can fix me.
Yeah.
And
100%.
Yeah.
Well, and it goes back to personal responsibility mm-hmm, and the responsibility that we have when we came here
yeah,
to be the best version of ourselves, mm-hmm, to live a joyous life, to be happy. And fortunately or unfortunately, the road to that is about remembering, but it's also about clearing out all of the stuff that was programmed into us, that totally. We believed at a young age about who we were and how the world worked, yeah. and our perceptions and all of it.
Yeah, being more like that kid that we were that didn't give a shit.
Right.
Yeah, when I sat in that bucket of wallpaper paste in my dress, I was having a good time. I wish my mom and everybody else had just left me there. Right? But we be more childlike.
Yes.
That's, absolutely. Don't let that world come in and affect you. You can control that.
Well, but the thing is that we can control that once we get to a place of recognizing
mm-hmm.
that we A, can, and B, the ability to kind of look at ourselves and go, is this really how I want to be?
Yeah.
Like, am I living like how I want to live? You know, if you're suffering from depression, well, what is that about? Like you said, and what do I do to not have it be that way? Whatever those avenues are that we've talked about.
And honoring all of those lives lost by suicide. I am fully standing for everyone that has gone.
Yeah.
I am here to honor their life and to live in gratitude that it didn't happen to me. And I also understand why they didn't feel like they could make it here in this physical world. But I believe that everybody that is past or is passing wants all of us to be happy. I don't think they want us to be feeling sad every day. I don't think that is honoring the people that have passed. I think it's more about honoring the purpose that they served in this life.
Yeah. Well, we are getting to the end. So if there's one message that you want people in our community to remember from our conversation today, what would it be?
Just live the best damn life you can, and be bold and wear the dress and wear the hat and wear the heels and who cares what other people think? I have just shocked on the daily about how much energy is put into caring what other people think about that. So you have to think more of yourself. Save yourself before you even consider helping somebody, because as we all know, or maybe you don't know, that you can't save anybody.
Right.
Yeah. So live the best, because it's not going to be here forever. We're going to die. We're all going to die one day.
Yes.
And I'm going to die, hopefully, like this. I live my best life.
Yes. I mean, that's what we want at the end of the day. We want to be able to look back and go, wow, look at what I accomplished.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for
sharing
your story and the work that you do. Conversations like this are so incredibly important. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's a big part of what I want to do in the world, which is to help people realize that they can.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Okay. And for people who are like you, really wanting to make an impact in our communities, it's important.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.